Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Daenerys 6 of A Storm of Swords. And Matt, this is our last Storm of Swords chapter for a good while, because over the next, I would say, 6 to 10 weeks, the show's going to be six weeks. We'll probably have another two after, maybe even three or four. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms premieres this Sunday on HBO. Is it at 9? I assume it's at 9 o'clock.
No,
right?
I think it's at, I thought I read that it was at 7 my time, which would be 10 your time.
What?
I thought that's
Matt,
what
I'm
I read.
Old. I will be in bed.
Thankfully, there are shorter episodes. We may have to record. We're definitely not doing a live stream, but we might even record on Monday and release in Monday evening, depending on what time it actually releases here.
Yeah. You know, one thing I kind of forgot about?
What's that?
We'll definitely have to record a little bit earlier because I have a golf simulator league. 6:30 on Mondays. I just remembered this.
That's fine. We can record early. Well, Tuesday I leave for Mexico for a couple of days, and assuming we don't kidnap their president, I'm either gonna not be held captive or something, or maybe I won't go if we kidnap. It depends. I don't know what's going on.
Just delete your social media first.
Seriously. No, it says here 10 p.m. Eastern.
10 p.m. Eastern time? I like how we're just figuring our logistics out on the podcast episode, but there's no way we record after that.
Well
for you, it's fine, obviously.
It's 7, but I work at 4 a.m. Yeah, so we're probably going to be recording and dropping these on Mondays.
Yeah. Dang.
Is my guess, because that's just that's really late.
my Mondays are going to be crazy.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll do a live stream or something. I certainly won't be doing it this first week, but the second week, I don't know. We'll kind of play it by ear.
We'll figure it out.
Reviews. By the way, reviews are coming out, and this is everyone's giving it good reviews. 8 out of 10s across the board is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think the only I've definitely seen people Gildas or. Yeah, Gildas and Alt Shift X, those are two guys I absolutely love. They seem to be very positive. They said there are some things that people are probably not going to like, but the overwhelmingly positive reaction tells me that this is something special. And in fact, I've seen some people saying this is the best book to show adaptation that we have in Westeros. They're saying it's that close to the tone. And Alt Shift X said he actually likes the show more than the book.
What do we have to do? Probably not tell the game creators their game freaking sucked. But the one time Warner Brothers did actually reach out to us. I mean, thankfully, I think it was ultimately it's the video game developers hired some ad agency. And tell you what, I didn't see a single other creator talking about it. So maybe
I saw one and they were like, this game sucks.
So I'm reading here, and it's the reason that they are holding it for the 10 o'clock rating show as opposed to 9 o'clock is that HBO pretty much reserves 9 o'clock is a more premium slot, so it's almost always hour-long shows, and the 10 o'clock time slot is almost unanimously for shorter shows, so half hour shows. So that is what I'm seeing here. So it's not like they don't believe it or anything. It's just that's historically what they do. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe
I'm sure we'll get the review. I'm sure we'll get people saying, well, dude, it should be an hour long episode. You'd have to, it'd be filler. Then a few weeks ago, people would be like, filler, too much filler.
So I did see all the reviews say this is a very slow paced show. And because it is such a short book, there's a lot of things in the show that are very like mundane. So Dunk going and getting a sandwich, Dunk going to get some apples. There's a lot of downtime between scenes. I don't think that's a problem at all, because you and I have always agreed that these are almost comfort reads for us. Not that there isn't action at some point, and not that there isn't some tension, but largely these are books that I can read with a smile the entire time. They feel good. And supposedly the show has captured that vibe. And to me, that is the thing that I was most concerned about. We'll see what the what the general audience reception is. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I mean, every review, IGN gave it an 8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes right now has it at 83%. So take that for what you will. But yeah, I mean, everything I've seen is people seem to like it.
Yeah, and supposedly has a bunch of different takes on like the sound of Westeros, and some of the cinematography is definitely different than anything that we have seen. So it has its own space in the universe that we have on HBO, but also maybe we'll have us viewing Westeros in a different light as well. I think all of this is really good news. There's gonna be stuff that maybe we don't like. That's how all television shows are. I can actually tell you things from the first four seasons of Game of Thrones I don't like.
Yeah,
but largely I love that show. So obviously, so I think we're in a pretty good territory. I love that it isn't this big split reaction thus far. I just wonder how.
Well, it's not Sunday yet.
That's true. Well, I'm saying from the publications, right? Like the just the people who are all the press releases and such. I hope that the slower pace doesn't ruin it for a lot of the newer viewers who have only seen the blockbuster pieces as the show. So we will see.
Let me read. Okay. Discussing film, Pitch Perfect High Fantasy. I mean, that's what they're, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call it high fantasy.
I was saying it's actually low fantasy, but that's fine.
Right. In fact, actually, it's even lower fantasy because this has no dragons.
It's
right?
The lowest, I mean, actually.
It's the lowest of all. I guess a Blood Raven's there, you know, but, I mean, they seem to like it. They said a fantastic debut season.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, they gave it 5 out of 5 stars.
Whoa. Okay.
I mean, I think everyone really likes it, man.
I'm so excited for this. And I think it's going to be, you know, so much different than anything we've seen. So I'm curious to see how that goes down. The thing that perked my ears up, Matt, supposedly I know I'm saying supposedly a lot. I'm saying that because I don't really like to say other people's opinion as my own. So this is all with a grain of salt because we haven't seen it, obviously. I've heard that there are some big lore implications, hints towards future stuff that maybe aren't even in the Dunkin' Egg books yet.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some connections other places. I think that is very exciting. You and I don't know how the rest of the people felt about it, but me and you really like the lore connections to the main show, or something in the books gets a nod. We like all of that stuff. So the fact that that's in this show that is going to be a little bit slower pace is something to look forward to, I think.
Man, I agree. And I'm looking at, it's up to 86% of Rotten Tomatoes now. It was 83% earlier. I mean, people love it.
Well, that's good.
People are saying it's a low stakes Game of Thrones spinoff is a welcome tonal shift from its predecessors. And that's what we've talked about from this book for years. It's like, man, when you go from reading the main series to this, you're just like, wow, it's to me one of the coolest. And it's one of the reasons I was so drawn to it initially, but it's one of the coolest things to go to because it does feel like this different. It shows you a different side of Westeros. Ultimately,
Different side of George too, and him going back to his short story roots that he became famous for initially. So
yeah, let me just read some of the other things critics are saying here. So Disgusting Film said no other Game of Thrones outing from HBO has felt like this, and that aspect alone is what makes it worth watching. London Evening Standard, I don't know anything about them, but they're from England, I guess, you know. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is much more intimate in scope, choosing to tell one story up close rather than struggling to weave together 10 over a series of years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Says opening with a poop joke establishes itself quite different from the adaptations that preceded it. Intimate as opposed to epic, far more lighthearted in nature. If Game of Thrones, this is a variety. If Game of Thrones pointedly ran counter to certain tropes, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is outright irreverent. Hollywood Reporter, the result is something I'd begin to doubt was even possible. A smaller, smarter, funnier, and more charming glimpse into George R. R. Martin's bigger, into George R. R. Martin's bigger is better realm.
Yeah, We mentioned humor in these, some of these. That was one thing I heard Alt Shift X say, is that he thinks that sometimes the humor may be a little too much and that it kind of cuts the tension. And I told you months ago, I was like, I hope they do not do the Marvel thing where it's a super serious thing and then someone's like,
let's throw in a joke here.
Yeah, like let's throw a quip in to make sure that you guys know you shouldn't take this. I hate that, to be honest. And it's not just a Marvel thing. It's in a lot of stuff that I watch. I'm not saying you can't have really well-timed comedy to break tension. I think that that's a really good thing to have at certain points. But when you do it time and time and time again, it makes me feel like I'm almost being mocked for taking it serious. So that's probably my main concern for myself. My broader concern for not me, but everyone, is hopefully they don't mind it being slower. But for me personally, humor is one of those things. It's on a knife's edge.
Well, here's some of the other things some of the critics are saying is there, so this is a section on Rotten Tomatoes. Is there enough going on for six episodes? So this person from Consequence, whatever that is, says the narrative feels a little thinly spread out. That said, the lack of plot could be seen as a feature, not a bug, as it allows Martin and co-creator Ira Parker to keep things focused on the trials and tribulations of its core characters. And you just keep going. Collider said, with season one totaling less than 3.5 hours, it's hard not to feel at the end of it all like we've been a little shortchanged by only following Dunk. Collider is also fucking stupid. So it's
hard. Yeah, I'm not a big Collider guy.
I'm not a big Collider fan, to be fair.
No.
But, you know, looking at a lot of this, some people are saying that, let me see, this is from Slash Film, saying on the rare occasion where the source material proves lacking, Parker and co-writers actually improve what's on the page with original scenes, new characters, and a knack for capturing the spirit of the tone of the book above all else. So it feels like there's going to be better character development, and that's what makes ultimately it special. I'm much more a bigger focus on any book I read where I want like good character development. That's what draws me into stories, whether it's TV, film. I've always choose that over some like amazing, you know, plot. Now, when you can get both together, but I feel like most stories tend to go in one direction where it's like, all right, this is much more about the characters, or this is much more about the plot. And I will always choose character driven stories. And that to me is what this is, because the plot in all three books are like, is pretty straightforward. There is a turn. Like that's pretty,
there's funny. A fight in the field. Yeah,
there's an attorney. Okay, you know,
like I think that this is the strength of adaptation, is that you can take those characters and make them bigger and larger than life. House of the Dragons actually done that. I know people aren't super thrilled with them right now, but they did do some great things with some of the characters that were, had way less characterization in Fire and Blood. I've heard Lionel Baratheon in this is an absolute show stealer. They say he's phenomenal in the show. So I'm very excited for Lionel Baratheon.
Dude, let me read this one here. This is another one. This is from Region Free, another publication I'm unfamiliar with. But whether it's a goodbye to a horse, a burial in the rain, or even a simple kindness between unexpected friends, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is packed with memorable events from beginning to end. And I feel like that's where you and I are going to be at the end of this whole thing.
I think so. I will say, I feel like there's way more positivity being thrown, like without any reservations. House of the Dragon had a lot of positives. There was a lot of people giving 9 out of 10, but there were a couple dissenters that said either they needed to see more or they didn't really like the tone of the show. This seems a little more consistent across the board.
Yeah.
All it needs to be is good, by the way, just so we're clear.
I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be fantastic. All it has to be, though, to the general audience is good. It's good, that's great, because most shows suck. That's the truth. You know what show doesn't suck, Matt?
The Pit. You already watched. Yeah, season 2.
I watched it the second it dropped, dude. It's outstanding. And that's a show that is far less complex to make. I'm not saying that they don't put a ton of effort in. I'm sure they do. But we're in just that ER room with a couple scenes outside, a little bit of a smaller scope. There's a lot of really good characters. And sometimes we're just watching them take their lunch break and it's captivating. Oh, yeah. Duncan Egg is also much smaller scale. I really do think that we might be going into the era of smaller scale shows that can be made quicker.
Yeah, higher production, smaller scale.
Yes, and faster filming schedules because they're not getting hampered by CGI constantly. And...
Right. I mean, it's like a show like Stranger Things takes like 5 years to do a season, right? And even like the House of the Dragon, which is running at full bore, is still two years
mm-hmm.
before you get the next season, and it's such a huge undertaking. But that's what it takes. Like you need yes. that much. You need that much for CG. So you have to pick and choose
mm-hmm.
your battles. And if I would. Would you rather have half a season? Like if Game of Thrones, let's just say, I don't know. I have no idea how they pulled that off.
Dude, for the
most part of knocking it out like year after year after year. Like that's because they were the first ones.
They were tired. Yeah, you can see why they were tired.
Exactly. But it's like, would you rather have House of the Dragon be half of a season ultimately in terms of content? Would you rather House of the Dragon be 8 seasons? But like 4 episodes or like have it split up into half hour episodes.
You can't win pleasing everyone though, because I saw people saying they're not even gonna watch Dunkin' Egg because it's only 6 episodes, 30 minutes. They said, oh, I'm not gonna waste my time. It's like,
I actually think the runtime is slightly longer than that. Like some,
yeah, I think it's like 30 episodes 40.
Are like 40. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, anyway, it's not that big of a departure. For me, Matt, I want it to be whatever the story needs. So if you need to take the 2 years, obviously the expectations are a lot higher, but if you need the 2 years, take the 2 years, do it right. Do I think 4 or 5 years is too much? Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think that, especially with the age of actors and actresses, I just don't think that that's the way to go.
So
I don't care to wait 2 years before the House of Dragon. I actually don't mind it, but I won't lie to you. I'd rather see Westeros yearly for sure. So I'm fully endorsing smaller, higher production or like higher quality shows. And I do think that the waiting fatigue has set in on stream viewers.
Okay. Well, hey, speaking of, let's dive into this. There's quite a bit of news. I don't know if we're getting into it all today, but there was George talking about some things, saying that he has given the showrunner, Ira Parker, outlines for 10 to 12 more stories. Of Dunkin' Egg. I would imagine that is beyond the 3 that we already have.
Yes. I think that what we can assume is that they now know everything that we want to know.
Right. A lot of people are like, oh man, he's writing more Dunkin' Egg books because he said he'd love to. And I think it's the same thing that happened with Dan and Dave, where he looks, for starters, we already know quite a bit of those stories.
Yes.
Right. We have more information already about what happens to Dunkin' Egg than you did going forward into Winds of Winter and Dream for Spring.
Yeah.
So you can already kind of frame it a little bit with that just on its own. But then, sure, he can certainly give them more stories. I think he has to know that he's definitely not writing those books.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
I mean, maybe somebody else will adapt it, or maybe he'll have like the people who, what's their names, Ilio and whatever, who do all the other books. Maybe they will get to adapt some of that stuff once the seasons come out, and that'd be fine. And you turn it into a book that way. But I think maybe this is good, because it's like, now I get to like, pull some of that weight off.
Oh yeah, yeah, I think so.
You know, it's not just Winds. It's like, oh, I gotta write Winds and I gotta write German String. Oh, and then man, the Dunkin' Egg stuff is still sitting over there.
Fire and Blood 2.
You get to pull some of that weight off.
Yeah, I think that this is definitely him hoping to tell the story he had planned to tell. I don't think we will see another Dunkin' Egg novella in our lifetime. I think we will
in our lifetime. I just don't think that George is going to be the one. It's going to be like George Martin releasing it as some big.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like traditionally, like here's sure. George R. Martin's new release. I don't see that happening. However, let's just say this show takes off, Matt. We get in 2-3 seasons. It is the largest show in the world. I don't think this is going to happen, by the way. But if it did, I could see Penguin Random House leaning on George saying, hey, we could probably squeak a few of those out, right? Winds is fine. We'll get back to that. this TV show is getting millions of viewers. Could you maybe put that out? Now, would he do that? I don't know. I have no idea. I saw people throwing around 12 seasons for this show. Let's not be ridiculous.
That's a lot, man.
Matt, if we get 3 seasons, I'll be thrilled. I'll be happy. I'll be good to go. If we get more,
depends.
Let's go. More's fine.
It depends, because if it's a big hit and production isn't that
sure
big on it, then you could. You never know. I mean, you never know. There's tons of actors that I thought would become way bigger stars. Like Jensen Ackles, for example, is an actor who I've always thought would be a mega star, and never happened. I mean, he's a star, but Jensen Ackles is in Supernatural and he's in The Boys. But of course, his time in The Boys is because it's the same like creative team that was in Supernatural. But he did like 15 seasons of that. I always thought that he was going to like break out to be some big, like, well, superhero, which he ultimately did in The Boys. But like, I'm talking like DC, Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people have rumored him to be Batman for years because he would fit the part and he's done Batman voice work. But yeah, man, I just, you know, so it happens sometimes. You never know. Mm-hmm. Even look at Kit Harington. Man, I thought he'd be a bigger star.
Apparently he's killing an industry right now, though.
Yeah, everyone says that's a really good show. He had a little bit of news too, where he's talked about like being upset with people who were saying like that were petitioning to like
he
change the Game of Thrones ending.
He finds it insulting because of all the hard work they put in. I actually do see where he's coming from.
I do too.
He also said, like, they were like, would you want to come back to do whatever? And he was like, oh, absolutely not. Like, and what he said makes sense. He said that, you know, I gave 10 years of my life to that. Not to mention he battled alcoholism during that time. Right. I do think it's weird, though, that he pitched Snow. Like, after the season 8, he was like, I'm done. Don't call me Jon Snow. Then he pitched Snow. It got shelved or declined. And now he's back to hate. It's a weird, something is odd.
Well, that. I think Snow, and we'll get to the chapter here in a second, but I Snow, all that stuff came out during like a really weird time.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it was like COVID and who knew what was going to happen. And then also like his career didn't take off maybe as he thought, because he was supposed to be in the Marvel Eternal. He was in Eternals and it was supposed to be a big deal. And he's supposed to be, I think it's literally just called like the Black Knight. It's kind of like the Blade side of Marvel. I'm not super familiar with the character. And then Eternals didn't necessarily, I kind of thought it was an okay movie, but it tanked, you know, and obviously isn't going anywhere in the MCU. So like that was, and then Blade, that movie is like shelved and on the thing. So his career maybe has a take. I still think that it could totally happen. Cause even let's say Duncan Egg. Let's say Duncan Egg comes out and it's huge, right? And which I certainly think it's going to be good because of all the reviews and everything. But if it's big and now it changes what a Game of Thrones story could be, and it changes like, oh, maybe I could come back for like a Snow show that's this type of format, like 6 30-minute episodes. That's not a huge commitment. And it also will show that Game of Thrones can work on a smaller scale.
Yeah. I think if we go by what he said recently, I would say that's not going to happen because he seems very set on it, but he changed his mind a lot. So well, I don't want to do anything he doesn't want to do.
Netflix money comes in. Right. Okay, buddy. All right.
Money talks. Nah, you're not wrong.
What if the Duffer brothers, or once Netflix acquires Warner Brothers, are like, hey, we want to do a Game of Thrones show with Jon Snow. Okay, now we're in.
You know? But I don't know if we want only money driven acting from Kit Harington. I think that might be less than ideal, but whatever. I mean, we'll see.
I feel like he only does money driven acting because otherwise he's not in.
Fair.
Does he get to pick and choose his roles? I don't think that's so. Fair. He's not good like point. Robert Downey Jr.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. I'd take it if they offered it to us. You talked about like the cost of things and budgets and such. The director and showrunner of Duncan Egg actually talked about how they have it's a small budget show. Like, I think that was the exact word, small budget show. So they had to get creative with costumes, with the music, everything. which is one of the reasons why people are saying that the show feels different, but it's actually like a good thing, like a lot more artistic flair because they can't just say, well, throw some CGI on it. I think that's kind of interesting. So I want the three seasons to do the George's, you know, adaptations. That's cool. If we get anything past that, awesome. I would love it.
Yeah. I just another review, and this person you really have to take with a grain of salt, because sometimes I think I agree with her, and sometimes I think she's batshit crazy. That's Grace Randolph, who said, you know, she really liked it, but also said somebody specifically asked about violence, and she said brutal at points, but much less overall.
Yeah, I heard the battle's sick. Like the sequencing, the cinematography for is supposedly some of the best in the show, like any show.
Yeah. So, I mean, take that for a grain of salt, because sometimes I agree. Sometimes I'm like a lot of people. I like movies that she likes that most of the internet doesn't like. And then, you know, kind of vice versa. So she's an interesting human being.
We all have our opinions, right?
That's true. You typically almost always disagree with her or don't like her, correct?
I
don't like a lot of movie people. I just like my own. You know.
I don't watch a lot of movie discussions. I don't like Red T. What is Red Letter Red Media? Team. No, Red Team Review's cool. They're
Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones creator.
Yeah, they're cool. I'm talking about
I know which one you're talking about. Red Letter Media. Yeah, they do. I remember some of their Star Wars stuff.
I know people love them. Like, I'm not hating on them. I've watched a few. I don't know. It's not for me, and it isn't for me personally.
Right. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the Daenerys chapter, which is crazy, by the way, that this is the last Daenerys chapter until the Dance of Dragons. If we were going straight through, we wouldn't be talking about Daenerys for like 2 years.
It's crazy.
It's insane. So I wonder, I'll get through the summary and then I'll toss it to you, Jimmy, for your points. And I'll look up the boiled leather reading and seeing how much sooner we will actually get to her.
Exciting times. Got a whole show coming up. By the way, Matt, I was thinking about this, dude. So we're telling people, hey, we're going to take like 6 to 10 weeks to do Dunkin' Egg, right? We're going to get back to Storm of Swords, have what, 7-8 chapters left? I think we are going to get interrupted by House of the Dragon.
No, because we'd only have that many chapters left. We're going to have to power through and do something, because I don't want to, you know, that's like too much. We have to finish A Storm of Swords before House of the Dragon.
We have been reading this book for like, I don't know, 17 years?
Pretty much. Yeah, we have to finish A Storm of Swords by that. So, okay, so this is crazy. So Daenerys 1 in the Boiled Leather read is chapter 6.
Oh, okay. We're getting right back to her.
Big difference.
Love it.
Huge, huge difference. In terms of reading it. So, all right, with that, let's dive in. Daenerys sits in the Great Pyramid of Meereen, her troops having conquered the city after the men she sent into the sewers opened the gates. She meets an envoy at Astapor who represents King Cleon the Great, a former butcher who now rules Astapor, supposedly in Dany's name. But the envoy suggests that King Cleon wishes to marry Dany, and that the men she left to rule Astapor will have all been deposed. Cleon has amassed new slaves and is beginning to train them as Unsullied. And Daenerys is dismayed that all she has done to free Astapor of slavery is coming undone. Finally, she sends Ser Jorah and Ser Barristan, wishing the two had died in the sewers, but the two knights are greater warriors than even at that suicide quest. Barristan speaks of things Daenerys was never aware of, that her father was mad and that Viserys, even as a young boy, seemed to be more like her father than his brother Rhaegar. The old knight tells her, the Targaryens have always danced too close to madness. King Jaehaerys once told me that the madness and greatness are two sides of the same coin. Every time a Targaryen is born, the gods toss a coin in the air and the world holds its breath to see how it will land. She absolves Barristan and he swears his sword to her cause, but Ser Jorah does not beg forgiveness and remains defensive, insisting that he has done nothing wrong. Daenerys then exiles the knight who was once her closest friend and protector, threatening to kill him if she ever sees them again. Later, Daario warns her that she should not have banished Jorah and that she may come to regret not keeping him near or having him killed outright. When her advisors urge her to move on, Daenerys decides that she must learn to rule if she ever wishes to sit the throne of Westeros, and she declares that she will stay in Meereen and rule as queen. So one of the things I want to say about Daenerys chapters, because I found this in reading this today, and I think it's been a while since we did a Daenerys chapter.
Been a little bit.
And it's one of the things we always talk about is that her read is by far the best in terms of a POV read, like a straightforward POV read, because she...
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown in the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM. Make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Her chapters one are pretty spread far apart. And of course, they're like so distant to everything that's going on. So the last time we were in a Daenerys chapter, by the way, was chapter 57. We're on chapter 71. So that was like, who knows what time last year, now that we're in the new year, that we were reading it, probably like June or July or something, just by doing like a week to week. And of course, you know, we have missed some weeks here and there. But man, it's still, to me, her chapters, and I realized this today in thinking about that time frame, I think George should have written like twice as many Daenerys chapters, because not only do you have the problem of them taking so far apart in the blocks of what you're reading, but also so much stuff, like big world building stuff
happens. Oh, it's huge, yeah.
Just in the background, and you like don't get any context, and you just feel kind of lost.
See, and I kind of love that.
Well, it just feels like all this stuff is happening, but he has to focus on the Dany character development, right?
Yeah,
you have to have that. It just feels like, man, all this stuff is happening, and it kind of goes by. It's why even still, so I went back actually for this week. I went back and listened to, like, I did Dany, and it's still, even going it that way, still feels like, man, all this stuff is like just happening, and like it's hard to follow.
Well, I think the thing is, and this is one of the reasons why George is, in my opinion, the greatest fantasy author of all time, is that it actually doesn't matter what's happening. The crux of everything in this chapter is how Dany reacts to what we've been told is happening around her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the feeling of being lost is kind of intentional as a mirror to Dany, who is very lost at this moment and is constantly making decisions that somebody around her is questioning. And in this chapter, it happens to be Daario and her removing Jorah. So I think that is kind of what George is getting across. Like, yes, there's all these things happening. Astapor is now fallen to this butcher. But what does that mean for Dany and her character and how she sees the world? Because let's be honest, like Essos, once we leave Essos, I doubt we will ever hear about Essos again.
Okay.
It'll be Dany coming back. So I think it's actually important to just focus on Dany. And I will say this. Dance with Dragons is largely the Dany book, and you do get a lot more details. I think it's so impressive what he's done in Meereen, George R. Martin. Like, he takes a book and just sets up an entire city with tons of history and different types of political factions who are against certain things. And then she's making changes and everything's collapsing. People are playing her. He does so much in Dance of Dragons to kind of catch us up on that. There is the problem of it being 20 chapters apart, no doubt.
Well, let me phrase what I'm saying like this is everything that's happening in Westeros, you're hearing a lot of that world building is done in tiny little lines throughout so many chapters, right? And one of the things I think we love about Arya chapters is Arya feels like she's at the center of it.
Yeah.
Arya feels like, oh man, you're hearing, well, these people had this battle and these people lost. And you miss out on that in the Dany chapters until A Dance of Dragons, when some other people are now in Essos, like Tyrion and stuff like that. And so you're hearing more about it. So it is better in A Dance with Dragons, I'll say. It's really kind of only this book that I feel like it's a little bit of a problem. I mean, A Storm of Swords, I still consider to be like one of the peak books. But if I had to pick, since we're closer to the end, the worst character, I would say it might be Daenerys in this book. I mean, again, it's still a fantastic book, but I'm saying if I have to pick a worst POV in A Storm of Swords, I would say Dany is probably my least favorite. There's a ton of epic stuff happening, but I think this book more so than like Game of Thrones, her chapters happen a lot. A Clash of Kings still works because her story is like, now we're wandering around the wastes and we've got the dragons and everything. It's smaller. I would say this is probably the worst block of Dany chapters. Is A Storm of Swords.
Do you think that comes from your deep-rooted misogyny?
Probably, because that's what anytime I criticize, it's like, you know, I mean, dude, it's, you know, anytime I criticize, sorry for criticizing Daenerys during Game of Thrones season 8 when she committed, I don't know, genocide.
I could not wait to drop that. Like, the whole time I was just itching to do it. I hear what you're saying for sure. One thing I will say that I really like about Dany in this book, and it starts to become a more obvious, I think, in this chapter, and it's my favorite part of the chapter, actually, is we hear a certain sequence of history all the time in Westeros. The Dany time is really the only time we hear a different version of that history, through subtle hints. And the hint that Barristan gives her, and this is honestly a massive, remember, at this point in the series, first time reader, we think Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna and raped her, right? Well, isn't that interesting that he ends up saying, you know, Viserys was actually more like your mad father, whereas Rhaegar, totally different. So we're starting to hear a different narrative around Rhaegar. This is where we could maybe start questioning, well, maybe Rhaegar didn't kidnap Lyanna. What if she went willingly? What if they had a baby more so out of love, right? And it's like you can almost start piecing it all together if you consider this what two paragraphs in a Dany chapter that was 20 before we saw her again. So it's kind of sneaky, like he is kind of connecting to Westeros, but it's more so a retelling of events or kind of framing Rhaegar into a different light. I think that, and that's why I think Dany's character is enhanced by Barristan Selmy so very much because of that, like way more than Jorah.
Yes. And structurally, the fact that Barristan Selmy is over there, although you technically may not know he's Barristan for a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's Artist in Whitebeard. I mean, maybe there probably were some people who were like, I think that's Barristan Selmy, but maybe didn't know until you get a little into it. Or of course, you know, we were reading it from the viewpoint of people who've read the book and seen the show. So yeah. I will go back just structurally here because I wanted to look. So A Game of Thrones, there's 10 Dany chapters, but she is very integral to the overall plot because Ned Stark is dealing with her to some degree, right? And that Robert's saying, yes, we should kill her and we should get rid of her. So she's brought up more, certainly. In A Clash of Kings, there's only 5 Dany chapters, but it is also only 70 chapters, you would include the prologue, 70 chapters, so that 5 feels bigger than the 6 here chapters where there's 80. Well, there's an epilogue here too, where there isn't the other. So there's 82 chapters in this. And that six feels much smaller in the 82, especially when you consider that this book, so many of the point of view characters, because now we have Jamie and we have Sam, the stories feel like that much bigger because they're all kind of connected to their own thing. Davos is really the only other person in this book who feels like his story is kind of out on its own. Because, I mean, you look at like, Bran only has four, but again, you're still like in this book, we have Bran and John passing, right? Mm-hmm. And Sam and Bran meet in this. So it feels that much more like disconnected in this book, I think, than the other books. Because in a Clash of Kings, even though there's only five Dany chapters, so much of it is like not really a lot happens in those five chapters, because it's like, oh, the Dothraki waste, right? And you know you lost your Khalasar, then we go to Karth, and so it's, but this book there's so much more that happens in her chapters, and it feels to me that much more disconnected.
House of the Undying is,
oh, it's huge. The big three. Stuff happens. Lots of lore dumping happens. I'm not discrediting the content of the chapters, but I think for me, at least, maybe there's something I struggled with.
Her being a woman.
Jesus. I struggled with Dany in this book. Now that we're on her last chapter, I still feel like it just feels so disconnected.
Yeah.
And the stuff that's going on, like, you know, we're saying all this stuff, and it just feels like, man, it's just you lose track of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say from a first time reader perspective, it was tough keeping Marine straight when in Dance of Dragons and this. It's just a lot of stuff. You can see why the Marinese Knot is a thing. You can see why Danny's been stuck there for 20 years. It's not an easy way to write yourself out of, like, we talk about, oh, what are you going to do with Stannis and this and that? Dany, you got to get Dany to another continent in a book. That is not easy to do and wrap up all these storylines.
And actually, in rereading this chapter, I feel like I'm talking about where so much more of it is her interpersonal character development.
Yeah.
With the relationships, and it feels like a lot of the stuff is happening in the background. Just do that. The focus of her chapter you can just do a lot of this stuff in the background. The focus of Dany's chapters in Winds of Winter, in order to get rid of her, should be her and Daario. That should be the whole focus of her story, is like leaving Daario behind needs to be, I mean, right now she's like kidnapped by the Khalasar. Right. She's like kidnapped by the Khalasar. I don't really get how Dany is the one that's hard to do.
Well, I think he wants to tie up Marine in a bow. I think, not bow as in everything is going to be peaceful. I think he really wants to do it, because another thing about this chapter is that this is one of the only times besides Ned Stark where we look at somebody who is not saying, well, I deserve to rule, therefore I will rule. She actually takes a second to say, well, I do believe I deserve to rule, but I should consider if I'm ready to rule. She wants a practice run. So with everything that's happened, Red Wedding and Tywin and Joffrey debt, all this stuff, you have this direct opposition here that is saying, yeah, I do think I am supposed to be on the throne, but I will go there when I'm ready. Whereas everyone else has just said, give me the power, give it to me now. So I think that makes her a bit of fresh air, one, for someone who's in what we consider probably the higher class. And also it's kind of remarkable, the fact that she's like a 16-year-old girl or whatever at this point, right? Like, you have to remember that. It's like, that's kind of wild. So I do think it, large part of Winds of Winter is going to be this character development of Dany, and who knows what kind of shift is going to happen there, but It's about ending the Daario line or keeping him. He might come along. We don't know. Tyrion connection, reuniting with Jorah, getting on a boat, going to the West. It's got to happen. Yeah. So I just think it's a tough way to get out of there, I think. If he wants to do it the way he wants to do it. A lesser fantasy author, I think would just cliff note the world building and move on. But George has taken great care to really set up the whole continent. It's kind of crazy.
Because it might play a role. And that's the thing sure. that the show obviously didn't. And that's
a great point.
That's going to be part of it. I mean, there's just so many things to consider in this whole deal. But I still think that the focus of Danny, just like this chapter where, you know, all this stuff was, we're going into the sewers and we're taking over Astapor and all of these things.
I love that, by the way. Love it.
All of these things are happening in sort of the background. But then the focus of the chapter is actually like these small little details of like her and Barristan talking. Talking about her dad and her Rhaegar. And it is cool. You know, this is a huge, I mean, the flipping the coin is a huge deal.
What a line, by the way. I know it kind of got memed on in the show.
But sure. But it is also symbolic to what Danny is doing in this chapter, right? Because there's two paths you can take.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have that choice, I think is what he's ultimately trying to get to is, are you going to go the mad route or are you going to go and be a great leader?
Yeah. And it's also, you know, her brother is considered to be the mad part of the coin. So that might be our indication that Danny isn't going to be the mad side of the coin. I don't know. I won't say any more about whether she will or she won't. Doesn't really matter, I think, at this point. And I've talked about what I think is going to happen with her, but it's almost like she's learning what it means to be a Targaryen.
Mm-hmm.
I love this chapter. Yeah. Really love it.
Okay. I'm going to read some stuff from Reddit here, just some comments. So somebody saying, so much has happened since the last Danny chapter, which ended with an allusion to her sending Barristan and Jorah through the sewers. This chapter opens in a new city spread below her, and George deliberately leaves a few little clues as to the escapee before retelling the tale. The scene with the master's crucifixions was very brief, but it is important for Danny's character. We see that the bricks of Meereen are still multicolored. Barristan is still bold. Jorah is ridiculously out of touch, which I can forgive him for, but he is also arrogant beyond belief. He thinks Danny is a prize to be won. He thinks he knows what is right for her and she should do everything he says, and that he should, you know, be essentially her father figure and his lover and her lover.
Yeah, dude. Sometimes those Reddit threads have some good stuff in them. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think it also, you look at this, I mean, there's a lot of two choices here, because she also is, I think that's like the coin thing is pretty important here, because then you're also Barristan and Jorah, which route are you going to go with?
Yeah. Yeah. And Jorah is so flawed too. Like him being defensive, all it had to take was just a bit of humility, but this is creepy. It's almost like he refuses to see her as her own woman.
Oh, 100%.
Which is creepy, because I mean, she's too young, but he likes her. Like, yeah, so, no,
Jorah's a total creep. Yeah, I wonder if when Jorah does make his, like, if he does, you know, make a big return that's different than the show, if it is going to be like as her knight. Not necessarily as like a lover, but like as her knight. Like the show, he kind of just, hey, I got the grayscale removed, I'm back, and then that's it. That's really kind of the last Jorah Danny.
His death is amazing. That
it's,
scene.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Powerful. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know where he goes. What if she just kills him? What if she's like, yeah, I told you I'd kill you.
Yeah. Actually, the best Jorah's like real character ending is kind of his conversation with Jon.
Yep.
Which is actually like for season seven, it is one of the coolest. It's a pretty cool moment, to be fair, of Jon saying like, this was your father's sword, and trying to give it back to him and him saying no and saying like, you know, like for as much crap as we give like season sevens and season eight, like, there are still some pretty obviously epic moments in it, and that's definitely one of the coolest conversations.
Agreed. Agreed, totally. I think Jorah is honestly a character you can look at that said overall handled pretty well in the show.
Yeah. Jorah is still one of my, like, man, Azor Ahai you know. Well, like he's like, it's like him and the Hound are the people I've always viewed as like,
bro,
if you wanted to go down the route, which I still think is cool, is like Azor Ahai is just like some rando person.
Okay, you know? What if Azor Ahai is a metaphor for an island, and Jorah has an island that he flies on dragon, he uses Danny's dragon, and he flies rich, influential people to the island.
Well, he's already into underage girls. Well,
there we are.
But no, I what I'm saying is I really think more of the Hound is Azor Ahai, but I always say like someone like Jorah being Azor Ahai, like the idea that it's not John or Danny, or that it, I mean, they could still be the ones to lead everyone together, but the actual person is just some like rando person, essentially.
The Hound would be sick for sure.
Sure, because it's
Melisandre. I don't know. There could be a lot of really cool considerations for that role. But I think Jorah needs an island.
He has an island, Jorah Mormont Epstein Island. Okay. That's a lot of these comments are really long. Let me see some of these other things. Yes, the coin. And any other big takeaways, Jamie, before I dive into some more specific quotes here?
Well, I kind of talked about how Rhaegar is slowly becoming more of a nuanced character than we had prior. But also I thought it was interesting to see Danny get pushed back from Dario, and that relationship in the show is nowhere near as good as it is in the books, in my opinion. And I mean, hey, by the way, this Butcher King, I always forget about this part, but it's obviously a complete metaphor for, you know, countries meddling in other people's governments, maybe removing a leader. And then what happens is the power vacuum, and then the weak stabilization. Basically, Dany's realizing that she cannot be this white savior who just goes into these places, topples them without understanding them, puts in her people, and then she leaves and it all kind of crumbles. Like, it's not that simple. And now she's going to learn from her mistake and try to fix it in Marine. And unfortunately, she has no idea how hard this is actually about to be. But I think, especially knowing George's earlier works and how he feels specifically even about Vietnam and everything, I think that this is him definitely making some real world commentary here.
Yeah. I will say the next Danny chapter, which is obviously in A Dance of Dragons, I mean, this is again why a POV read is ultimately so good, because that is the chapter that ultimately ends where she is ruling and people bring her the bones of children that have basically been killed by her dragons.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Which is one of it's brutal, but it's one of the better chapters. And so remember that this thing ends ultimately with Dario telling her that she shouldn't have banished Jorah and that she may come to regret it, which is also interesting that you'd think he would be like, what? Because, you know, then it does kind of make Dario a little more mysterious, because obviously Dario wants to be with Danny, but Jorah kind of wants to, but he still views Jorah as like somebody valuable to her, which does ultimately help. It does also add to a lot for Dario's character, because he's willing to say, hey, I know this guy wants to hook up with you, but he is still one of your trusted advisors. I wouldn't get rid of him.
Kind of utilitarian, and maybe, just maybe, he'll see something that way whenever it comes to Danny and turn his back on her.
Right.
Mayhaps. I really love this chapter. I love the opening description. It was beautiful. Also, the King Cleon is not just terrible as a leader and not what Danny had in mind, but he has amassed new slaves, which she got rid of slavery, and then she freed the Unsullied, and it said that he's making new Unsullied. It's quite literally a complete reversal. Like, in her trying to get rid of those things, she has actually just brought in a new generation, and now even more people are being hurt. It's such a sticky situation.
Yeah.
Poor Danny.
Do you think the Danny being betrayed by love, right? Because, you're going to be betrayed these three times. A lot of people think Jorah, you know, is...
Sure.
So could it be Dario?
Yeah.
Could it be like, not necessarily Dario... I mean, this might be like a cheesy way of doing it, but is it like Dario going to, she's saying, I think you should come with me, and him saying no, because like I would be, you need to like go and rule and marry. And so she might, it might be like a betrayal. Like, I don't think it's going to be like Jesus getting betrayed, you know, like those type of betrayals.
Once for blood, once for gold, once for love. Dario could even be gold. Though I guess, no, you know what?
But no, I what I'm saying is Dario may not betray her at all.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. I said
so. I'm wondering if like that, the betrayals won't really be like people like sticking a knife in her back, but it's.
It could. Yeah. I think Dario will. I don't know exactly how it'll happen.
I think Dario is going to end up the same. I think she's going to have to leave him, and it's going just like maybe Jon Snow and Val or whatever, but it's that Dario is Danny. Well, I guess
Danny's Val.
I was going to say it's Danny's regret, but I guess you could say
that was kind of Khal Drogo, because it was like opposite of factions, like enemies to lovers type thing. Right. Kind of. I mean, not really.
It's definitely different.
Stuff's way more gross.
Yeah. Well, in the books, it's a little different than the show. They seem to be a little more like in love in the books than they are in the show.
Yeah, but it's still pretty bad.
It's still, yeah.
Every time I read that chapter, I want to die.
Yeah,
it's like it's probably the one chapter I would say I borderline hate, honestly.
Yeah, well, there's no Sansa chapter in the books. Otherwise, that'd be the ones I'd really hate. But
another woman, Matt. Okay, I'll remember that.
Gee, Minnie, Chris. Yes, I'm saying I think that sexual assault and rape is bad. That makes me misogynist.
You know what? Where there's smoke, there's fire, Matt.
Jeez.
That's I'm just asking questions.
Clearly. Okay. Any final thoughts on this chapter or Danny, which we will actually be talking about her sooner than we would be the other way around if we weren't doing boiled leather.
I'm just excited to do boiled leather because that is, I always do feel that long wait to see what Danny's up to, and we don't have to do that now. The boiled leather stuff's going to be so fun.
Yeah. Any other quote? Let me, one quote. So the red door is brought up here a little bit. We should probably talk about that.
Yeah.
So I'll read a little bit of the last stuff here. So Missandei is talking to her, and this is kind of a bigger Missandei chapter. So right after Jorah is leaving, you know, farewell, old bear, farewell, betrayer. She was Daenerys Stormborn, the unburnt Khaleesi and queen, mother of dragons, slayer of warlocks, breaker of chains. And there was no one in her world that she could trust. Then Missandei comes and talks to her. Your grace, Missandei stood at her elbow, wrapped in a bedrobe, wooden sandals on her feet. I woke and I saw that you were gone. Did you sleep well? What are you looking at? My city, said Danny. I was looking for a house with a red door, burnt, but by night, all the doors are black. A red door, Missandei was puzzled. What house is this? No house. It doesn't matter. Danny took the younger girl by the hand. Never lie to me, Missandei. Never betray me. I never would, you know. And then look, dawn comes. And then this is kind of interesting because now you're talking about dawn, right? And then every time that comes up and stuff like that, but it is slightly different until you get to talking about a cobalt blue from the horizon, you know, and then pale gold and oyster pink. So, you know, just reinforcing those colors. And then anyway, they sit there and they watch, and then like a bird begins to chirp. So they're standing there. She's saying the sounds of my city. And then Brown Ben Plum comes up.
Big boy.
So, you know, she's thinking, all I've brought to save Slaver's Bay is death and ruin. And I have been more Khal than queen, smashing and plundering, then moving on. There is nothing to stay for, said Brown Ben Plum. Your grace, the slavers brought their doom on themselves. said Dario. You have brought freedom as well, Miss Andy pointed out. Freedom to starve, asked Danny. Freedom to die. Am I a dragon or harpy? Am I mad? Do I have the taint? A dragon, said Barristan with certainty. Marine is not Westeros, your grace, but how can I rule the Seven Kingdoms if I cannot rule a single city? He had no answer to that. Danny turned away from them to gaze out over the city once again. My children need time to heal and learn. My dragons need time to grow and test their wings. I need the same. I will not let this city go the way of Astapor. I will not let the Harpy of Yunkai chain up those who I freed all over again. She turned back to look at their faces. I will not march. What will you do, Khaleesi? Stay and rule and be a queen. And then in the next chapter, her dragons do get a fly and they kill some kids.
Yeah, so not great. Would you say that all those descriptions of the sun coming up and the nature and how it's described way more like with a lot of imagery around colors, do you think that the red door is some sort of thing in the environment, like a sunrise or a sunset that's turning the door red?
Oh, and so she thinks that the door is red.
She thinks it's not, the door is red.
They talk about how the doors here are actually all black.
Right. So I'm wondering if like that fire is our hint.
Like, that's interesting. I haven't thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
I don't know what that means, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, I haven't thought of that. That's a good idea. That's a good theory. We could do a Patreon on that.
Do the lemon trees grow in Dorne? They do, right?
Yeah, that's why everyone thinks it's mostly in Dorne.
Yeah, well, also Red Door could be like, you know, sand and the sun hitting it. Like if you've ever been out to Red Rock in Vegas. I haven't been out there. And when the sun goes down and the sun sets, the entire desert looks red. It's insane. So that could be our hint that it is, in fact, Dorne plus lemon tree. Like it almost reinforces it.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's Dorne anyway, 100%. Yeah. I think that's all going to come back and play a role and play a part for sure.
Yeah, so just something to think about. Also, big bad Ben Plum. Always good to see him.
Yeah. Okay, well, next time, as we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones, our next episode, Jimmy, Night of the Seven Kingdoms, Episode 1.
A new Westeros show is upon us. Crazy. I'm excited. Me too. And if you like our podcast and are excited, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.